Thanks, mate.
I've done the men, leadery man bit now.
Do you know, you led so well.
Thank you.
I feel that you said... I do, thanks. I actually texted him at 8:59 and said, we're starting in 2 minutes, you need to get here, and there's only three people. And he came in and he said, how good are you at counting? The bit that's worrying is that I'm actually in charge of budgets. I don't like this. This is not my comfort zone, so you need to bear with me. I get nervous and my humour comes out, so everybody at the end says, oh, how did it go? I'm like, as long as I don't say anything bad. Make somebody cry or fall off the stage, so thankfully we're on one level. I'll be okay. So today what I want to do is just talk about a bit about women's ministry and why it's important and kind of how we have developed it at Nidri. Now, I know there's lots of women in there because they've come and spoke to me and said, oh, I can't wait for you to speak. I want all these practical answers. I'm sorry you're going to be disappointed. But hopefully when the end comes and you ask some questions, we'll get the opportunity to speak a wee bit more detailed practically into some of the situations. So when we start to think about women's ministry, most churches in the UK, they don't or have never considered women's ministry. If you ask the question, how do you look after your women? The chances are, in fact, you might have even said it yourself, well, you can go and speak to an elder's wife. And I'm not saying that's a bad answer. It is one answer. But what I'm saying is it is, in this day and age of a complex and growing pastoral issues, it is something that we need to rethink and put a wee bit more meat on. Liggins Duncan's book, Women's Ministry, he says this. Some church leaders are so afraid of women assuming unbiblical roles in the church that they fail to equip them for the roles which they have been indisputably called in the home and the church. And I think that for us to get past the fear of, I don't know quite how to do this, and actually do it well, we need to think about it. One of the other things that frustrates me is the suggestion that as women, we don't struggle with or deal with some of the same issues as you guys do. I mean, obviously our problems are not as hard as yours. And just say it. Please don't be offended by my humour. And it's just simply not true. It really isn't. And to simply say that because we don't have the same needs, or you think that we don't have the same needs and therefore don't need specific care, it's not helpful or wise. So, I mean, we do as women, we struggle with very much the same issues as you do. I mean, the biggest growing industry for women in employment is in the porn industry, and not for acting, it's for directing, because they want stuff specifically that meets our needs. So I want to talk through some of the big influences, some of the reoccurring problems that some of our women come across, and then look at how we as a team try to face them. So sexual and emotional integrity. Many of our women do struggle with porn. I know that it's a wee one-liner that you guys do all the time. It's not a women's issue. It totally is. They deal with all the stuff that goes with that. Same-sex relationships, adultery, sex before marriage. It is a complex thing. And it's really not often black and white. And for many of the women that we come across, they've maybe got three kids by two different dads. And at that moment, they're working on partner number three. And the question is simply, does she leave her, or when she becomes a Christian, does she leave her partner and live as a single parent? These are complex situations that need wise women speaking into well. Financial and emotional, financial integrity, the buy now, pay later industry, the maxing out the card and then getting another card on 0% interest to max that out because your budget, your allowance has gone up a bit. That whole McDonald's generation that thinks that they have to have everything now. And in the schemes, we see this massively. So disproportionately, the people who are the most poor would have the greatest proportion of debt. And they see it as a matter of pride, if their kids aren't dressed in the right stuff. And we see lots of women who are genuinely giving up what we would see as the bare necessities of life, not the song, but truth, the reality, electricity and gas and food, just to pay the bills. And then when it comes to women, their bodies become a commodity to use to pay off the debt that they've got. So another issue that we see a lot of the time is self-discipline. And it seems weird to talk about it from their kids' perspective, but this whole, when they get to nursery, the teachers will deal with their issue. When they get to school, their school teacher's going to deal with their issue. When they get to high school, the headmaster will be dealing with it. And I would suggest that if they are not disciplining their children, the chances of them disciplining in their own life will be greatly lacking. And it's everybody else's fault. It's not their fault that their kids are kicking off. It's not their fault that they are deeply in debt. It's not their fault that they've had three partners. It's not their fault that there's no electric in this week. They struggle with just the simple disciplines of life and anger. On the schemes, I would say that anger is one of the biggest silent killers that are out there. Everybody is raging at somebody. And on the schemes or the housing estates, for many of our women, it's an absolute given. Far too many women are raging at everybody, raging at their kids, the social work, their social workers, the police, their exes, because they've chased them off that week, their friends on Facebook, because they said something that they shouldn't have done. That whole volatile situation, it's got to be exhausting. And sometimes they just walk around. You know that, I'm going to show my age now, but you know that Ready Break advert that you used to get with a little orange glow and they set them up for the day? Sometimes I think our women walk around the scheme with a little low hum, with a little Ready Break glow of anger, and it really doesn't take them, because they're all already at DEFCON 8, to like fly them over the edge. They're volatile and dangerous, and unfortunately are completely weighed down and exhausted just by the emotional stuff and the torrent that they need to deal with on a daily basis. One of the other big issues that we come across is mental health issues. And I know that for many of you that were here on Monday's session, because you came and asked for Mezzi's session on mental health issues, that you guys face same or similar issues. And it's completely complex. Mental health issues, from disorders such as depression right up to severe psychosis. The spectrum is massive. And I don't know how that you speak into that, but particularly in SCHEME, many women are suffering from and completely debilitating mental health and physical health problems. And it's compounded by whatever else is going on, drug use, their disability, chronic pain that they're feeling from something, just bringing up their kids on their own. 50%, it's a really sad statistic. Somebody said earlier, there's 3% of people that like statistics, and I'm one of the 3%. 50% of kids so 50% of children from depressed like families will end up being depressed themselves before the age of 11. That's pretty sad. And we see that on a regular basis on schemes. When you've got, you just need to look at some of our testimonies that say that they were diagnosed as, on our website, that they were diagnosed at a very young age, 12, for depression. So the Mental Health Foundation reported that socio-economic pressures such as poverty and low levels of education are recognised risks to mental health for individuals and communities. The greater the gap between rich and poor, the greater the differences are observed between their health. And I don't need to, if you want to know where that stat is, I'll tell you later. But I don't need to, if you've been working on council estates, to tell you that that's obvious. We see it every day in the people and the women who we spend time with. So I've highlighted some of the issues, and then we get to the detail. So when it comes to women who are struggling with these and many other issues, many of them are sadly dealing with those without good godly advice or even discipleship in their life from an older, more mature believer. And that would be where I'm coming from. Women in schemes and housing estates, or even in suburbia, right, are dealing with no different struggles. The only difference is they articulate it in a different way. They are dealing with many of the same issues. However, the reality for the women in schemes and housing estates, can I just say schemes? Yeah, thanks, because you know what I mean. The women in schemes, they are dealing with not just one, but multi issues. And they're dealing with them in very, very complex situations that have been perhaps decades in the making. They learnt their behaviour, seen it in their mums and their grandparents around them. These are very vulnerable, very needy women in desperate need. And I would suggest that we need to have a well thought through pastoral care package for them. Amongst this melting pot of problems and struggles, I would suggest that it is really not wise or prudent for any man to be counselling and even praying in an intimate way, investing the serious amounts of time that these women need. I would suggest that that's not a man's role. I would suggest that what you need in that, because they need to see good godly men, they need to see examples of that, but the time, the care, the compassion, the love, the investment that they need needs to come from a good, solid, mature woman who is prepared to invest in them for the long haul. And it's important that we think through from that perspective and be intentional about how we do women's ministry. We need to biblically train our women, equip them for the task that they have, to help nurture and equip the women in our congregations and the new believers to grow and serve in a good way, to be good examples. It's an absolute much-needed component of the church, and it complements and supports what the elders and the pastors are already doing. So when we get back to the beginning of Ligon's statement, I'll read it to you again. Some church leaders are so afraid of women assuming unbiblical roles in the church that they fail to equip them for the roles to which they have been indisputably called in the home and the church. And I would suggest that women's ministry is necessary. You guys need it, whether you are in the heights of suburbia or the depths of the darkest housing estates. We need good, godly women who are showing an example of what a godly woman looks like and teaching them well how to do it. So we need to not be afraid, but to think it through. So how did we address those issues in Nidri, and what does women's ministry look like for us? It's not one size fits all. It's not like what works in Nidri will work for you guys. So I'm not standing saying that we are, I'm an expert. The mistakes we've made, I could write a book. But the truth is that we tried to think through some of these big issues as we went. So we've got a women's ministry team. We call them a women's pastoral team with a small p. I feel like I have to caveat this, because at the last session, they debated the word pastoral for 40 minutes, which I kind of think misses the point. Again, we're back to the argument of discussing what we can do, big p, small p, and not looking at the fact that we actually should be doing it. But I'll not have that rant. So, I know. Just a little bit. So small p, women's pastoral team, small p. Say that. Please don't debate with me afterwards. Go talk to Miz about that one. So we selected women from our congregation who had shown signs of pastoral gifts. Now, I know that you all think this is dead easy and there's the obvious choices, but we really didn't go for the obvious choice. We did in some cases, but some of them, people were kind of going, really? But they'd shown a glimmer of. So we couldn't do that in 5 minutes either. We had to be really intentional about looking at the women, how they dealt with the ladies in our congregation, how they got alongside them naturally, how they interacted with our community, and how they handled the tough situations in life, not only going on in their own lives, but what some of our ladies had been speaking to them through. And I got this list of 8 women, and I presented it to our elders, and thankfully they sanctioned them. And they said that our structure, and that would be my second point. So first we need to select the women. The second point would be that the elders need to give it's okay. And for us that was really, really important. I know it's such a small thing, but it actually gave weight to what we were doing and legitimised it. It also ensures that we work within the biblical framework that's in our church, that we submit to our elders and not work independently of them. So even in doing that, it was creating a structure within a structure. So I focused on these 8 women, which seemed a really bit weird because I'd been I'm not really the average women's worker. I don't know what that looked like. But I'd been spending a lot of time with the majority of the women in the congregation, and to actually pause and step back and just focus on 8 seemed a bit weird at first. But actually, I focused on the 8 and I developed and trained them. So I developed a training program based on, it's a bit of a kibosh between how people change, some case studies that I created so that we could practice on not real people and get all the mistakes out of the way. And then also looked at some more of the problems that we would come across in depth, like depression. We looked at that in a far greater way. And we spent nearly 2 years working with these women and training them and praying together, praying through some of the big issues that were going on in our congregation. I also asked some of the ladies in the pastoral team to create dossiers on issues themselves. So if they had a particular thing that was an interest to them, like parenting in complex situations, they would look at, come up with the training and bring it to the table. So that also meant that I could see who had a desire to and want to teach and had the ability. I think one of the most important things that we did was that we admitted that Superwoman doesn't exist, right? She really doesn't. That one person can't do everything. And it doesn't matter how good you are and how much lies you tell to yourself, you genuinely can't meet everybody's needs. So what we did was we divided up the task of what a woman's worker would look like and spread it between the team. Each woman had oversight for one particular responsibility. So for example, Ali Balam is responsible for looking after our older women in the congregation. Now she didn't visit every single woman that's over 60 in our congregation, but she makes sure whoever is responsible for looking after that lady does the job. And if there's an issue or a new lady that needs looked after, Ali would be the one that has responsibility for that. This was gift-led, which was what then led to the more organic approach that we have as a women's pastoral team. I think it made us stronger because we were focusing on a woman's gifts and shoring each other up well. It also meant that we spread the net between us all, and so fewer people slipped through the net. And what grew was because we were relying on the women's gifts, they grew in confidence in themselves, as well as they just took their role and ran with it in ways that you couldn't have imagined if it was my role. One of the upsides of doing the approach this way has been really beneficial is if someone leaves. If you have a women's worker and she is the sole responsibility for every woman in your congregation and community, if she leaves, the gap that when she goes, it's like starting again. But because we spread the load between us, so one of our pastoral girls has left and joined one of our church plants. And as a pastoral team, we know that at some point she's going to be taken out of our group and focus on the church plant that she's in, which is right and good. But that hole doesn't slow down or hamper the care that we give to our women. And that hole can be far, far easier filled than if we were trying to fill all roles at once. In the early days, it was really, really hard for our pastoral team. So I know that if I asked every woman in this congregation, do you want good discipleship? Do you want accountability in your life? There's not one of them that's going to, well, there might be. But mostly, everybody would go, yeah, I really want that in our life. And when I talk to many women across the world and talk about our accountability, they all say, oh, I wish I had that in our life. And you're lying. Right. The truth is, there's none of us that like to dish up our deep and darkest secrets to ourselves. I mean, we don't even confess to God most of the time without being convicted, never mind telling it to another human being who we have to trust with that information. So for our new converts from the community who were unchurched, they had no issue with this at all. They just thought this is how Christians did things. We didn't enlighten them to anything else. And the truth was, they would get saved and come and say, who's going to be my mentor? Is it going to be you? Is it going to be Miriam? I'm like, I don't know. But for our Christian women, they were like, it was crazy days. And for about 18 months, the struggle our pastoral team had with just getting alongside women who legitimately were saying, I want this in my life, but were kiboshing it at every opportunity. They struggled in every way, shape or form. That makes them sound harsh, but they're just the same as the rest of us. The get into that intimate relationship with someone where you are making yourself so vulnerable that they're going to know that you're not Mary Poppins and practically perfect in every way. That you're absolutely admitting that is hard. And many of our congregation struggled really badly for a long time. And part of our role as women's workers was to just help our pastoral team to keep on keeping on, not to give up. Just to be patient, to try and love them well, to keep speaking well into the situation and pray that they would turn a corner. And we are so grateful that many of the women who struggled immensely in the first 2 or 3 years actually came back and said, do you know, I'm really sorry I gave you guys such a hard time, but it's really one of the best relationships outside my husband I have in my life. And that was encouraging. That was absolutely encouraging. But it was really hard for our pastoral girls to just encourage them to keep on keeping on and to keep wading through the difficulties that they were coming to. So because of that, what we have now is about 85% of our congregation have a real honest-to-goodness accountability partner in their lives. And I'm not talking the fluff that we do at Costa. How's your life? Oh, it's like super fine. I'm praying for my neighbour. A genuine accountability partner that they share those difficult struggles with. And our pastoral team didn't do it all. Again, Superwoman really doesn't exist, even in amongst the eight. It's not like the Super Eight. The truth was that we and most of our there's only two of us that at that time were full-time staff. The rest were all mums or working full time, and we would say just do one or two women really, really well, really, really well, and encourage those two women to do women really, really well. And what we found over time is that we passed down our DNA to the next generation. So there's always something, Titus 2, somebody else who's got somebody that they can come back to who's a more mature Christian. So we spread the net as wide as we can and pass the DNA on. Now, women are different from men. I hate to blow everybody's bubble, but it's true. And for some of our women who had far more complex problems, the one person in their life genuinely wasn't enough. I'm not saying that when you have an accountability partner, it's to the exclusion of the body, because it's not. But you can be intimate with 74 people on a Sunday morning. But so we have, I've got no other words to say for it than this. So we use a 3 degrees model. There's one lead singer and 2 backups. It's truth, we'll call it. So we have one who is the main accountability partner and 2 other mature Christian women that would be in that relationship to show up, to support and to back up. And what that means is for the women who are far more complex, that even when somebody's on holiday, that there is someone that they know that they can go to that will give them good godly advice. Now, we aren't Stepford wives. We don't say exactly the same thing in the same way. We are very different, but we know that all the women who are part of our pastoral team are going to give, we know are going to give good godly advice in their own way. But we know they're going to point them to Jesus. So that's how we did it in Nidre. And then there's the one-to-one accountability that I want to focus on. So mentoring and disciple women from unchurched and potentially chaotic backgrounds is difficult. And simply, as the guys have said the last 2 sessions, meeting them once a week and for an hour in Costa just isn't good enough. We need to live with, walk with, get alongside, share our lives with, and that's costly. And when we come to ask the truth about why, as girls, we aren't doing this, I would suggest it's because we don't want to pay the price. I find it bizarre how we don't really understand how to teach younger Christians how to be godly women, because as women, we teach our kids all the time. My son, who's at uni now, when I taught him to do the washing, right, I didn't just hand him a box of Persil, the washing basket, and gave him the manual for the washing machine and said, there you go, son, get it done by the end of the day. Because it would have been carnage. I mean, it was carnage even after I showed him. But the truth is, you walk your children through how to be a grown-up adult. I taught him that he has to know how to cook seven meals and seven puddings, just so he's got something different once a week at least to eat. You teach them how to be grown-ups, what it's like to pay the bills, what it's like to be disciplined about how they use your time. And it's no different for how we teach our young new believers how to be grown-ups. But for many of our new believers, we think that discipleship's like that. We hand them the manual, the Bible. We give them a quick set of instructions, usually a handbook of some kind, a wee, like, devotional. And we give them the odd instructions and we say, there you go. I'll see you in a week. We'll have a bit of coffee and we'll talk how it's gone over. For new believers on the scheme, we need to do more than that. We need to model what godly design looks like. What it looks like when you have, you know, that moment where you've cleaned the house for 2 hours and the kids come home and in 30 seconds, all the girls are going, yeah, I know this. 30 seconds later, the kids have demolished it and it looks worse than it even started 2 hours ago. How in that moment do you model what a godly woman looks like? That's what we need to teach. Titus 2 tells us this in 2:3-5. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behaviour, not slandering or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may be reviled. So we are to teach, and that is costly. We're mentoring new believers. We want to have good Bible study. We do. We want to have genuinely great accountability and lots of prayer. But we need to be spending lots of time with the women in our lives, the new believers, one another and exampling what maturity actually looks like. Being a helpful, godly witness so that they can see it for themselves. So in Christian circles, I would say that the format that we have of this one-week Bible study, the prayer meeting on a Wednesday evening and the two services on a Sunday really isn't enough. It's not enough. Particularly in schemes, we need far more than that. We need to be doing the whole side-by-side. If a new believer on a scheme has to leave behind their friends, their family, close-knit bonds, and all we're offering them is that little bit of something that's not even depth, then it's not enough. I mean, Tasha that lives with me, I still don't know how she manages it, can be texting somebody all day, can be phoning them walking up the road, and in the minute she gets in, she FaceTimes them. And I'm like, "How? What have you got to say? You've been talking to them for the whole day." But it's that kind of close-knit thing. And all we offer is 2.5 hours a week, really, of corporate time. It's not good enough. We need to physically teach the younger women and new believers what it means and what it looks like to love our husbands. Because in schemes, I can tell you, most of them have a really bad image of what a guy should look like. They have bad impressions of guys for some very good reasons. They've not been very helpful. And we need to show them the examples of good, godly men bringing up their families and leading their families well. We need to teach them what it is to be self-disciplined, but also discipline our children. That actually, it's not good if the kids are screaming riot and think that no is a word that doesn't exist. We need to teach them when the kids are whining, the house is a tip, there's very little in the cupboards and there's no dishes because they're all under the bed, what it looks like to be that godly woman in that moment when the crisis has happened. Because we as women, we portray this fakeness that's not helpful. We do this Sunday morning, Mary Poppins syndrome, I call it, practically perfect in every way. That actually on Sunday morning, is there anything going on? And you're like, no, I'm fine. I mean, you've been screaming holy murder at the kids because you've been trying to get them in the car. And you walk through like the church door and suddenly your family's serene and from the Waltons. Went off track there. And it's not good or helpful. So in the crisis where life's difficulties come, because they are going to come, you just need to read James to know that how do they deal with life struggles well? How do they deal with the stuff that life is going to chuck them and life is kicking them in the teeth? How do we show them? We need to model what that looks like. We need to model being good, godly women in that situation. Women need someone to ask their "what do I do when" questions without feeling that they're going to be like either rejected or told that it's a stupid question. What did I do when my ex is being a complete numpty and teaching the kids something bad at the weekends when and undoing everything I've been speaking all week? What do I do when my sister takes my kid out in the buggy and uses them as a decoy while she steals in the shop? What do I do when? We need to be one of those women that can answer those questions. So I would say that we need to do life and life discipleship. Jesus focused his attention on a few men, he's already said that. He ate with them. He did life with them. He didn't have individual meetings and a little hour with each of them where he spoke well into their life. He did life, chatted with. We need to do this. We need to chat as we're washing the dishes. Chat as we're going to Asda's. Chilling with a cup of tea. Round the kitchen table. Doing the ironing. Although that's not going to happen in my house. Never do the ironing. But we need to be really involved in people's lives and far more effectively than just this 1 hour. I know I've said the same thing 5 times, but the Bible repeats itself when it's important. Focus on the few and encourage them to focus on the few. Admit that discipleship is more than just the impression that we have. And admit that we all need help. Part of Titus 2 is no saying that I actually absolutely have it all sorted, because I don't. You just need to spend half an hour with Miriam, although she'll never tell you anything, thankfully. I'm just as screwed up as the next person. Mrs. is confirming that. That's my one-to-one partner. I need just as much godly women speaking into my life as I need to be speaking into somebody else's life. And I need to admit that as godly women, we need to admit that we're not Mary Poppins. We need somebody older and wiser speaking well into our lives as well. We need to get to the heart of the matter and stop faffing around. The trouble is that we don't like to challenge. As girls, we hate it because we think they're not going to like us afterwards. They may hate us. They may never speak to us again. And the truth is that when we take that apart, it's all about us and not about them. So we need to love them beyond ourselves and love them more than ourselves and love them well and get to the challenge. So get to the heart of the matter. And we need to speak that truth when we do it of love. But we need to speak it. We need to speak well and wisely, gently speaking into somebody's life the truth, no matter the consequences to us. So if they choose not to speak to us again, we need to be that Proverbs 27:6 person that speaks the truth and not be the enemy that's kissing them and telling them everything they want to hear. We need to example Christ and point them to the best example, who is Christ. Continually point them to Jesus. I am the answer to nobody's problems, but he is. And we need to make sure, as Mez has already said, that we don't teach them to rely on us, but to rely on God. And we need to teach them how to apply it to our lives. I think we forget that as women. We talk about the Bible really well, but we are really bad at applying it to our lives. And we don't just leave it hanging. We actually do something about it. And then the accountability bit. So we all do it as girlies. We say, oh, I've been really challenged by, and this is what I'm going to do. And then we forget 30 seconds after we've said it. So we need to hold each other accountable for that. So the other stuff we do in Nidre, apart from the accountability and the structure that we have, is we do the same as most people. We've got ladies' socials. We've got random hangouts. So like legit, we just fill the car and we go to Costa, just spend some time together. We have an annual retreat where we go away as girlies and spend. We're actually going this weekend. Got a speaker coming in, and it's an opportunity for us to, if you are doing busy, to just catch up with those that you've not seen, but also just to be fed really well in the word. So we have all those things, and I'm genuinely not saying that we're experts, and we aren't. We've made some massive mistakes. But what we are trying to do in some way, shape or form within a good and a right biblical framework is care for our women well. We are intentional and have thought through what women's ministry actually looks like. So we are still trying to work it out. But at least we're thinking about the subject. We are trying to help our women and mentor them and equip them for the ministry that's there and for 20 schemes, to work out not only their faith, but what that looks like to grow in their love of Christ and to act that out in their life. Women's ministry is a much needed component within our churches. I mean, if your church is anything like anybody else, I would say the majority of your congregation are women anyway. If done well, and really well, it should complement and support the existing work of our pastors and elders. And my hope for this was genuinely just to encourage you to think through, get past this, saying, go to an elder's wife. It's a good answer, but it's not the only answer. And she's probably just, there's only just probably one or two women there. We need to think through how we do get past the conversation of what a woman cannot do and focus on what she can do and how we help and equip and enable her to do it well. And because I encourage you as pastors, if you have a good, well-equipped bunch of intentional women acting within your congregation, it would make your life a lot easier. Is that not true?
Not really.
Okay. Thanks. That was a begrudge. That's true. So that would be me finished.